everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing. Tom, I don't think I have seen in just about 30 years here in Tucson a more productive, at least at our place in the central foothills, a more productive 10-day period for the monsoon.
Well, that's interesting. It's interesting to me because I saw something in the news or heard something in the news that last year, there was more rain at this by this time than there was so far this year.
Well, I don't know, but our rain gauge is showing over about 5 inches. Fletcher McCusker is with us, chair of the Rio Nuevo Multipurpose Facilities District Board. Fletcher, have you ever seen downtown was hammered.
I was downtown. Both of those storms that came at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They said we had 2.5 inches in less than 20 minutes.
Wow.
And we're right there at the stone underpass.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was full, you know, above the 8 feet line in less than 10 minutes.
You definitely should put a diving board there.
That's Tim Steller, who's back with us after a couple of weeks up in eastern Canada. He brought some very nice kind of moist weather with us. Of course, Tim is columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. The board that Mr. McCusker chairs, of course, was created. The voters really created this, didn't they, Fletcher, in 1999. Then there were a bunch of tweaks. And then the most current kind of reincarnation of this board was about 2010, wasn't it?
It's a sordid history. Nice plug for the Star. They have an unbelievable chronology, I think, of every article that they ever wrote on Rio Nuevo is in chronological order. Mm-hmm. It's quite fascinating to start at the beginning. Indeed, it was passed by a voter referendum, Prop 400 in 1999, overwhelmingly supported. And then for 10 years, as we all know now, Bill, they spent $250 million, which no one can really account for what they did with the money.
Well, there was infrastructure work, right?
There's some stuff was done.
I guess they didn't do flood control work, though, as part of the project.
But they did walk away from some $60 million worth of projects. So you're right, the legislature intervened in 2010, and I think the bet money was they would just shut Rio Nuevo down. And instead, they've taken it over. So we now report directly to state government.
Since you were with us about 3 months ago, we try to bring you on every quarter for kind of an update. Has this been a real, we're talking about productive rains over the past 10 days. How about Rio Nuevo as far as economic development?
It's probably been our most active quarter.
Most active 90 days.
Most active 6 months for sure. If you drive around downtown on the west side now, you'll see the Caterpillar site just west of the freeway. We're excavating 8 acres of landfill there to make that site ready for Caterpillar. 20,000 truckloads, they tell me, being hauled out of there, taken to Los Reales.
And then does that need to be refilled? Or
it's going to be cleaned. It has to be refilled with clean dirt. And, so it's one of the tragedies of the original Rio Nuevo. You know, that whole landfill was never remediated. And, of course, now, you know, 15 years later, the cost of that are extraordinary. But you literally can't develop anything over there without taking the methane-producing trash out. So we're scraping it all out. We're taking it to Los Reales. It'll take 4 months, they tell me. Across the street, the new Mercado Annex retail has been launched. That's another Rio Nuevo-supported project. If you're downtown, you saw the diocese building come down in about 2 days. That's a new housing complex, and also saving the Marist College, Cathedral Square, the AC Marriott's 20 days away from opening. So, indeed, there's just never been more simultaneous activity, Bill, downtown than probably now.
So Rio Nuevo is specifically involved in most of it, as I recall. Certainly the Gadsden, the Caterpillar, the hotel, the AC Marriott. What else that's going on now is Rio Nuevo?
Pretty much any project down there, we're involved in some sort of partnership. The current Rio Nuevo board, our attitude is not to be all things to all people. We are a much better seeder of projects than we are funding an entire project. So we like to partner with private developers. We like to partner with private lenders, private equity. So all of those projects, Tim, have some Rio Nuevo commitment to it. Caterpillar, of course, is all ours. We're actually building their headquarters building there, about a $50 million project. But in all those other projects you mentioned, we're somehow a participant.
What is the deal terms with Caterpillar as far as what they have to accomplish in order to retain the benefits that we're giving them?
Well, they've signed a 25-year lease, so we didn't start the project until that was negotiated. So we will prepare the site. We're spending about $4 million of Rio Nuevo money on site prep and about $43 million on the construction of their building. When that's completed, we lease it to CAT for 25 years. So if they exit early, if they choose to terminate the lease, they have to pay off the remainder of the construction cost. So it's a really great deal for the state, and in fact uses very little TIF money because most of that is financed by private lenders.
Would you say that Rio Nuevo is somewhat of a hybrid here for downtown redevelopment across the country, which normally downtown redevelopment is kind of driven primarily by government? So this is a little bit different, isn't it? And that perhaps is some of your success to that difference.
It's the San Diego model. You know, I took a very fateful trip, the same trip that Paul Cunningham was on, in fact, years ago when we visited San Diego. San Diego was a TIF and a very successful TIF. But what they told us is for every dollar they invested, the private sector invested six. And they had this attitude they wouldn't start any project unless there was a private sector partner. So we kind of stole it from them, Bill. We brought it back to Tucson. We have limited dollars. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that creates some urgency because you don't have the money the old Rio Nuevo board did. So what are we going to do? Well, let's do what San Diego did. Let's find partners. So since then, except for the arena, which is all our money. Everything else, we've had a private sector partner.
And that's tax increment financing.
That's the word, increment. Yeah. You know, the point of a TIF is that you increase new revenue, new sales tax. So it's designed to be incremental.
So with the but this, why is it that the old Rio Nuevo had so much money and you all don't have as much anymore?
Well, they borrowed. Most of the money they spent, they bonded. So they, of that $250 million magic number, about half of it is TIF proceeds, and we enjoy that today. We get about $1.2 to $1.5 million a month of sales tax dollars. Unfortunately, almost $1 million of that still goes to pay off the old bonds. So in addition to their own income, they borrowed, Tim, about $150 million. So they literally spent $300 million in a matter of years. Some of that TIF income, some of that borrowed against TIF income.
I'm sorry, did you say that you're putting about $1 million a month?
A little over $1 million a month. We collect right now about $1.2 to $1.5 million a month of state tax dollars. It's up about 30% just in the last couple of years, as if that's a good barometer of how the economy's doing. And
30%. That's a lot. Over what period?
Since 2012.
Okay. And now home prices and rentals are going up. This had kind of been one of the last areas of the valley to kind of see this increase, but this increase is pretty significant. I think it's up about 20% in some areas.
As high as 30%.
Wow.
Huge demand on the new apartments. You know, they're leased up as soon as they get built. A lot of demand into the fringe area, the barrio in particular. Barrio house prices since 13 have almost doubled. And it's the millennials, the urban hipsters, the people that want to live and work and play downtown who are creating this demand. We're bringing up about 2,000 apartment units now, and there's probably demand for two or three times.
The modern streetcar took a lot of hits when Mayor Walkup helped push that through with that so-called federal Tiger grant that really made that happen. Has that been a big help for you in recruiting economic development?
it's a commuter boondoggle. No one will argue that it doesn't go anywhere, but it's created waterfront property. Okay. Everybody that had a restaurant or a bar or something wanted to be on the streetcar line. The hotels, Caterpillar. So it created this kind of light rail demand that's created about $600 million of economic development.
Mm. I'm hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, that one of the reasons for some of that housing development, and perhaps deals that you're not involved in, is that the streetcar creates a lever for federal funding, especially of low-income housing. Is that right? It's basically a lot easier to get grants for federal.
There are a number. We've had a lot of LIHTC, that's the low-income housing grants from HUD recently, two successful projects in the downtown core, one on the west side. And you're right, there are several boxes that trigger points. Being in a blighted area is one of those. Access to light rail is one of those. Income levels. So downtown Tucson literally scores the highest of many communities in the country, in fact, for low-income housing. So I think you've got three projects currently going up that were all awarded in May.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. It's 12:15 on the Buckmaster Show, but if you're listening on Saturday morning, it's about 7:15 in the morning because this program does re-air on Saturday morning on KVOI. A quick shout-out to our partners who support us, TucsonSentinel.com, Inside Tucson Business, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun, TucsonLifestyle.com, Southern Arizona News Examiner, and the Three Sonorans all have the Buckmaster Show logo prominently displayed on their website with a link to BuckmasterShow.com. We'll be right back. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Phillips Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Phillips Plaza.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
What comes to mind when you envision the holidays? If it means surrounding yourself with family and friends as you welcome treasured traditions, just imagine if those moments were paired with sinking your toes in fine white sand and exploring quaint seaside towns. This winter, spend your holiday with a sense of adventure on a family reunion vacation. At Bon Voyage, we specialize in bringing generations together through travel. This is the perfect time to plan. Call Bon Voyage Travel at 797-1110.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Fletcher McCusker is here, chair of the Rio Nuevo Board, and Tim Steller, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. I had a question from a listener about a multi-covered sports stadium. You know, that's got kind of a real checkered past, doesn't it, about building a stadium downtown?
We were going to build one. We affectionately call the place where the Greyhound was located the Arena Lot. Was going to house a 16,500-seat arena.
Kind of shaped like a turtle or something?
Tortoise shell arena, yeah. The estimates for that were internally $80 million. Bill, the low bid was $190 million.
Whoa.
So that's another project they abandoned. And, you know, once the U of A committed to McHale, without some sort of anchor tenant that would fill that kind of arena, it's foolish to think about that. So we'll probably never see anything of that scale in Tucson.
So there was the redo of the Tucson Convention Center.
That's the first thing we did when I got there. I said, okay, we're not building a new arena. You know, let's fix the one we got.
So, has it been brought up, do you think, to a high standard?
Yeah, concerts are full. The hockey did very well. You know, it's hard to get a date booked in the arena now. We've got to move on to the X Hall and the Music Hall and the plazas. You know, it's still, a lot of it's still an eyesore. But,
and with the hotel coming, it's making it a very attractive, much more attractive for conventions.
Yeah, we need, you never see a, I don't think you're going to see the 350, 500-bed hotel downtown, but we're seeing a lot of interest in these 120-bed so-called boutique hotels. And we're always going to be a mid-tier market. We're going to compete with Palm Springs and Albuquerque and El Paso. We're not going to compete with Vegas or San Diego.
Speaking of hotels, what's the status of the former Hotel Arizona?
It's on our agenda. It just went out today for Tuesday's meeting, so that's all I can tell you about it.
Is it like an executive session?
Or I think it's in both, Tim. So okay. The agenda just got posted today. I'm conflicted there.
I usually
don't know anything, but I do know it's on the agenda.
You're conflicted. Why?
Bert Lopez and I partner in a couple of business deals, creates a conflict of interest.
Okay, but that was one of the original hotels downtown, the
70s.
What was the genesis of that? Can you tell us about that?
It was originally a convention center hotel.
Was it a Holiday
Sheraton
Inn? Oh, Sheraton.
And it just fell into disrepair. And there wasn't any real demand on the hotel. I think its occupancy went down to like 30%. Mr. Lopez has consistently insisted that he gets some sort of incentive package from the city, and the city has steadfastly refused. So it's been boarded up now going on 5 years.
What about this other hotel? Is it the Moxie?
The Moxie is going to be fun. There's one in Tempe. Okay. They probably wouldn't let you and Tim in it.
We're too old.
Too old. It's designed as a very hip millennial hotel. They crossed out the "not" in the "do not disturb" sign.
You can disturb. So yeah, they want you to not disturb. Please disturb me. Yes.
It's a Marriott brand. So the Marriott's committed two hotels to downtown even before the first one opened. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, I've always been slightly concerned that second one is moving forward before the first one is kind of proven out as a concept. Was there a reason for doing it that way? Did an opportunity just come
Marriott
up?
Marriott sees the market very much like they do Austin or San Diego, New Orleans. A lot of young millennial traffic, a lot of music, you know, the Hotel Congress, the Rialto. So they've targeted this for this kind of millennial traveler. That's what these hotels are designed for. They're not your Crown Plaza, mm-hmm. you know, traditional Sheraton kind of brands. They're designed to be young and hip. The Moxie, you check in the bar. You go to the bartender.
You check in the bar.
Check in the bar.
Have a drink and then go to your room.
Or not.
Yeah. Or not.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So, you know, it's surprising to me that they think we're that hip, but clearly they're investing, you know, almost $100 million in those two hotels.
And what are we doing via Rio Nuevo in the for the Moxie?
We're G-plating that, and then we're rebating the sales tax. So they get to keep all their sales tax until 2025.
With those rents going up, is there a fear of what is often referred to as gentrification of a downtown area?
You're seeing it now. You see it in any urban development that was blighted. The cost of construction, you know, demands a higher rent. Higher rents demand higher income residents. So they tend to drive out the low income kind of population. We're seeing that in Tucson. I think our apartments that are coming up are now the highest rental rates in the entire city.
Wow.
Yeah, it has not, unless they build a lot more apartments downtown, it's not going to be affordable for your average person, it seems to me.
No, you have the low income, which is subsidized.
Right.
And then you have market rate, which are the highest rates, you know, $1,800, you know, $1,200 a month. And there's nothing in the middle yet, Tim. So yeah. A lot of that's driven by lenders. So, you know, when they get interested in this middle bracket, I think you'll see developers move to that.
It struck me that you know, we continue to be partnering in a public sense with these private developers. At what point do we just say, you guys can do it. You don't need us. Do it if you want. Don't do it if you don't want.
Or without public
money? Do it without public money, yeah.
When commercial lenders improve their debt-to-equity ratio. So right now in downtown Tucson, a developer can borrow about 50% of their project. If you're building anywhere else in the community or doing residential, you can borrow 75 or 80% of the project. So that's the gap that organizations like Rio Nuevo are designed to fill. So, you know, developer will usually put up 25% equity, borrow 50 or 55%. A lot of the projects that have languished, like Don Bourne's, have been that gap that they couldn't fill. So when we started trying to fill those gaps is when the commercial lenders said, gee, if you do that, I'll do this. Mm-hmm. And that's really what brought the game back down.
And what are the next big things that still need to be done?
A lot more
other than flood control.
A lot more residential, which we think you'll see coming.
In like apartments?
Apartments. Mostly apartments are easier to build through zoning and developmental services than properties for sale. Mm-hmm. So I think you'll see more rental units. We think you might see as many as 5,000 in the next 5 years. Primary employers. Caterpillar's been a huge catalyst for other big companies. Hexagon Mining's coming downtown. We're talking to two or three international type companies.
What about your former company, Providence
they
moved.
They went the other way.
They went the other way?
Yeah, they've broken the company up and moved out of downtown.
After you did all that work bringing them to downtown.
That's the hedge fund way. You know, when a hedge fund takes a public company, they usually break it up. And
so,
that's what's happened to Providence.
What is going on in that Providence building right now? It's a beautiful old building you guys redid.
The church is in there. The diocese is in there while they build the cathedral square. So they've mm-hmm. taken the space temporarily.
And you guys are also getting involved in East Broadway in the area east of downtown, which, of course, is part of the TIF district.
Right.
Can you remind us what your involvement is there?
The so-called Sunshine Mile is the widening section that runs from Euclid to Country Club. There's some 50 properties there that the city will acquire for the widening that would have otherwise been torn down. So we went to the city council and said, instead of tearing them down, why don't you give them to us? And we will repurpose them as retail. And the economics are very dramatic. We lose about $5 million a year of sales tax revenue through all those properties. Not only do we gain that back, but we increase that by about $4 million by reactivating those parcels. Now, the city has to work with us because we're taking the frontage. So there'll be literally right up against the street. So you've got to figure out parking and setback issues and access to the buildings and how you deal with all that. But the city's been very cooperative. We'll probably start acquiring properties from the city later this year.
Did you do hockey last year?
I did almost every game. I sat right on the glass. I loved it.
So I would think they would be hoping for a little bit of a boost. They did pretty well the first year attendance-wise.
They averaged about 4,000 people. Yeah. That was more than we all expected. Mm-hmm. I would like to see them hit five or six. A lot of turmoil, of course, with the Coyotes. So
yes.
We're all very concerned about what happens
but
to the Phoenix
franchise. But they are staying? Are they going to stay in Phoenix?
That's what they've said. They've announced, the new management said, we intend to stay in the Valley and we'll figure it out. And they've approached us and said, we're not leaving Tucson. So, so far, so good.
On retail, there's been a lot of trouble in retail lately just because of competition from the internet. Are you guys concerned that the tax revenue could, at least the growth in the tax revenue, could slow as a result of that?
I don't think you're going to see a lot of traditional retail downtown. The reason the malls work is because you can park and walk, and you can pretty much go to any store imaginable. It's really hard to replicate that experience in a downtown environment. So we still think it's going to be a lot of food and beverage and, you know, nightlife and music and, you know, not so much retail. Somebody like Gap or, you know, could break that cycle. But, you know, so far we've not seen any of the traditional retailers approach us about downtown.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it up with Fletcher McCusker. What was your favorite show? You said you've been to some shows at the TCC. I know you love 60s music as I do. And 70s, right? You like a lot of music.
Well, we saw Elton John at the arena.
I understood that was
unbelievable.
A great concert.
And people were complaining about it being too loud. So,
wow.
You know you're aging.
Older crowd.
It's like, that was so loud.
That's why some older people don't go to the movies these days. They think the theater
is. There is such a thing as earplugs.
Anyway, we got to let you go, Fletcher. Thank you very much. Always good to see you.
Bill, thanks.
All right.
Tim, thanks.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Jim Nensel is going to join us from The Weekly. Tim's going to stick around, and we have no shortage of things to talk about on our Friday roundtable. We'll be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects helping make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. And improved mobility leads to a better economy and new jobs through the increased flow of people, goods, and services. More efficient access gets us to where we want to go faster, and that means more time for family. Working together for a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the news from a different perspective. Local opinion from Emil Franzi, Bill Richardson, and Bruce Ash. Our national columnists are the best. Michael Barone, Thomas Sowell, Ilan Berman, Avik Roy, Bill Tatro, and A View from the Left with Sam Smith of Progressive Review. Plus, Michael Ramirez political cartoons. It is thoughtful opinion and commentary only found in the Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday at noon, the Monday Political Face-Off features commentators Jeff Rogers and Bruce Ash. Plus, we talk with the head of the University of Arizona-based National Institute for Civil Discourse. Buckmaster airs on AM 1030 KVOI. We've got our worldwide live listening podcast and show archive on my website, which is buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Friday edition, or if you're listening Saturday morning, it's the Saturday morning edition of the Buckmaster Show, airing 7 to 8 Saturday morning. Let's go now on the live line to Jim Ninsel, who is the editor of the Tucson Weekly, and Tim Steller is with me in studio. Tim, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Jim, how is your day going so far, trying to put out a couple of publications down there?
Oh, we're rolling right along, working our way through our production process. Ever exciting.
Well,
never a dull moment.
I know they really feel really good that it's all in your hands, you know, and so they're very happy with you, I'm sure.
We're doing our best.
Okay. Ann Kirkpatrick scheduled to announce, I don't know, Tim, do you know if that was already, did that happen this morning? Or Jim, do you know if there was a news conference or what was the venue?
I believe it was a video.
Yeah, oh. I don't think there was actually an event.
Oh, they don't. They just put out a video.
Yeah. I'm looking for it here. Okay. I don't think there was an event.
All right.
I believe it was a video.
Okay. So
announcement earlier today.
So she is in the very crowded CD2 race. Jim, how does this change the dynamic for like Dr. Matt Hines, who ran unsuccessfully last time, but as he told me here a week or so ago on the show, that he believes he has good name recognition. Patients still come up to him. He said, I really loved your commercials. So who knows? So how does this change the dynamic?
Well, certainly you've got Matt in there. You've got Mary Sally Mattiea, who I think is actually going by Mary Mattiea now to avoid confusion with the McSally brand that she's going to be going up against. So, I think it's so early right now that it's tough to see how these things are going to play out. But I would say that Kirkpatrick certainly enters the race as one of the top-tier contenders of the folks we have out there. Matt, of course, is another one, although he did lose by a pretty significant margin last time. And I would say Mary Sally's got a pretty good crew behind her. She's got the support of people like Bill Rowe, a big shot in the Democratic Party, as well as a pretty solid consulting firm with Saguaro coming up behind her. So we're going to see how all this stuff fleshes out between now and then, but there's a number of other people, who are in this race, and how that vote's going to get split, we don't know. And there could be some more surprises along the way.
Timothy?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ann Kirkpatrick certainly has name recognition and all that, but I'm not sure, you know, she's new to this district mm-hmm. after having kind of called carpetbagger on a couple of her opponents in the old district. And so that accusation is going to come back on her. I don't know. I'm not sure if she's, you know, the McCain loss, especially that debate performance. It tarnished her a bit, I think. And so while she certainly has the strength of a former congresswoman,
she struggled really in that
debate. She struggled in that debate and that race. I mean, she lost badly.
Right.
I thought she had made a good gamble in trying to take on McCain, but I was totally wrong. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see Democrats, really not flocking to the kind of dependable former power in Ann Kirkpatrick.
What do you think, Jim?
Well, I think those are entirely possible outcomes to this whole thing. But at the same time, it's not as if Matt did well against Martha last time out either. So yeah. There's that issue floating around as well. And I think, you know, there's some possibility, given the news of the sad news about John McCain and his cancer, that there's a possibility that he may not finish out his term. And if there's looking for someone to appoint to John McCain's Senate seat, I would think Martha McSally would be at the top of that list because she is a rising Republican star. And should she move in that direction, then that opens up a whole new dynamic down
sure.
here in that race. So, like I said, a lot, it's pretty early to be making too many predictions about how things are going to go because I've never seen such a wild ride in politics as I have in the last 6 months, and I don't think it's going to get any smoother.
And it's interesting, this is a perfect time to segue into Tim Stellar's column, discussions on John McCain's successor take on more urgency, because McCain is in office, the term is 2022.
It expires 2022, yep.
He's 80 years old. He's facing a very difficult situation health-wise with the brain cancer. So the procedure, if he were to resign, can you give us that very simply put, Tim Stellar?
I'm sorry, so the procedure is pretty simple.
Governor,
yeah,
the governor.
I was thought you were talking about the medical procedure.
No. No, that's a different procedure.
That I cannot comment on.
No.
But it's real simple. The governor must appoint a Republican because McCain is a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so the little complication comes in terms of when the election would come. The appointee has to stand for election at the next general election.
Which is presumed like an even year election.
Yeah, 2018, 2020.
Right.
So, you know, after I assume that there's a certain point of no return before the 2018 general election, after which he could appoint somebody and it would be too late to stand for election in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, if he appoints before the 2018 general election, then that person stands in that election, 2018. The key little complication here is that then the person serves 4 more years. In other words, till the expiration date of McCain's current term. They don't start a fresh 6 years.
Yes.
So, yeah.
All right. Jim has called us, not this Jim Nitzel, who's already on the line, but our friend Jim Kelly wants to join in the conversation. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bill. How you guys doing, Jim and Tim? I'm still curious about so many people in the Democratic primary for Congressional District 2, and I have a feeling they're going to beat the living daylights out of each other and be so bloody going into it that Martha McSally gets it in the walk.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think about that?
Okay.
But I have some increasingly strong opinions about this. I personally like that for whatever party. I think it tends to strengthen more than it weakens the candidate who comes up. That's just my opinion, but you know, the last let me see, was it 2014 when Ducey was elected? And the Democrats ran candidates, almost all of whom were unopposed in their primaries, and they got slaughtered. They were totally unknown, and that election is one that convinced me that, as hard as primaries can be on fundraising and such, it's more important that the candidates be seasoned and have name recognition going into the general election.
Yeah, because Jim Nitzel, Fred Duvall didn't really have any competition in the primary, and then he suddenly maybe didn't have the name recognition he needed in the fall.
Name recognition is important. I think Jim does raise a good point that there could be some bloody infighting among Democrats, and that can sometimes leave some sour feelings in the wake of that. And again, you know, a lot's going to depend on what happens between now and the election, because right now, if you believe some of the polls that are out there, Martha McSally's approval ratings have taken a hit, but there's time for those to recover. But there's also time for those to get battered further. And we sort of have to wait and see what happens on the national landscape, because I think the national mood plays a big role in many of these races at the local level. And Martha has done some really good things for Southern Arizona. If you look at the A-10 battle, she's helped protect some aircraft down at Fort Huachuca as well. You know, she's been working hard on this postal service question of whether we're going to have this postal sorting operation still going. And she's made an effort to kind of develop a persona aside from what's going on in Washington with Donald Trump. However, she has also voted alongside the Republicans on many of those issues, including the health care bill, which, you know, is who knows where it is at this point in the U.S. Senate. There's so much time between now and then, and the last 6 months have been, I just haven't seen anything like that in politics.
Jim, your final thought there? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's...
Okay. I want to go back to Tim's column about some of the people in the top tier. You had congressmen, mostly were congressmen, Trent Franks, Gosar, Schweikert, Kirk Adams, who's Ducey's chief of staff. Those, and along with Martha McSally, are in Tim's top tier. But here's the wild card, and it's been done in states before, I believe mainly in the South. The governor can appoint himself to be the senator. So for Governor Ducey, who some have said would love to be a U.S. senator, here's your fast track.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is, what does he want to be? If he wants to be, you know, a Washington player, then certainly go for it. You know, I think it's more specific than that, though. You know, my suspicion, based on a little bit of reporting, is that, you know, his eyes are more set on the White House or the vice presidency if the right person ends up running for president in the Republican Party. So all that said, I mean, I don't know. I could, if he really wants to prove himself in Washington, sure, he could do that. And I don't think the political blowback would be that significant.
You don't?
But
how do you phrase something like that, Jim Nitzel? I've decided that I am the best choice to fill.
Having reviewed all options, I reckon.
I mean, with the signing of this pen, I mean, it was an easy choice for me. It's right in front of me.
I've looked deeply into the mirror and seen the best.
Listen, it worked for Dick Cheney.
Yeah, absolutely. And there have been others who have appointed themselves. The one that I didn't mention.
Yeah, you left one out.
I left a huge one out, and it was just skipped my mind, and that was Cindy McCain. It's very common or traditional for the governor of a given state to appoint the spouse of a resigning, deceased, or retiring U.S. senator. And I think that would be one of the most likely scenarios. And I think David Schweikert is a very likely scenario. Martha McSally also is likely, but I think
she's
has some drawbacks.
From Tucson, which, you know.
She's from Tucson, and she's more moderate than the other candidates. And, I don't know. Maybe not, in my view.
Let's see if we can work one more call in. I believe Carl would like to go on the air at 790-2040. Carl, I've got about a minute. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, this is Carl.
Hi,
Am I on?
Yeah, you're on the air.
All right. Assuming that Ducey goes ahead and appoints himself for senator, my assumption is that the deputy governor, vice governor at this point, would become the governor, and right. then do we what do we do about elections to replace him, or how would he be replaced?
That would be Michelle Reagan, actually, the Secretary of State would become the governor. Yes, that would be the order there, right, Tim Stone?
Yes, and then more dominoes fall, and I'm not sure at what stage we then have to vote on Michelle Reagan. Would that then have to be at the next election as well?
Yes.
Yeah. That would be 2018. I mean, it all depends on timing, of course.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. The whole McCain story this week has been kind of like a political earthquake, hasn't it, Jim Nitzel?
Yeah, and I think it complicates things as Republicans are trying to find a new path forward on the health care in the Senate. Certainly not having John McCain's vote there makes it a lot harder for them to get to 50. So, yeah, I think it's definitely dominating the news cycle here and nationally, because he's quite a national figure. And it's very sad to discover that he's facing this.
It's easy for us who are interested in politics to lose track of that personal part of it. This is a man who is facing mortality now. Probably.
Yeah, and it's very odd. It's the same brain cancer that Senator Ted Kennedy had, and we were talking about possible resignations and everything. I believe Senator Kennedy died in office. He made less and less frequent appearances back at Capitol Hill for real important votes. He would come out, but I believe there was no resignation. I could be wrong on that, but I know he sticked around to the end pretty much.
Yeah, I looked that up yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was 3 months from when he had a seizure and then was diagnosed with this cancer mm-hmm. to when he passed away.
Okay. Jim Nitzel, we're going to let you go. Get back to work there, putting out the weekly. Thanks.
I sure will. Thanks so much for the time. Good to talk with you and Tim.
Take care, Jim.
And Tim, I hope you have you had a great vacation. We didn't get a chance to really talk about it, but it was nice for you to get away, wasn't it?
Oh, fantastic. It was really one of the best vacations I've had.
And it was weird because, I mean, not weird for you, but you missed the worst heat week before the rains came.
Well, it was pretty bad before I left,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it was bad.
I was really glad to come back for some cool, beautiful
cool
weather.
And rain. All right. Good to have you back.
Thanks
a lot. All right. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell next. It's 12:51. The Regional Transportation Authority is on track to deliver the remainder of the promised projects in the 20-year plan, now in its 11th year. A recent 10-year performance audit finds the RTA sticking to the plan and schedule. The RTA applauds our members and partners for helping us to stay on schedule and to improve our transportation network for everyone. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Twisted Tandoor, the legendary Indian food truck, now has a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu expands on the popular Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, it's at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive and on the web at thetwistedtandoor.com.
All righty then, Weekend Watch, hosted by Inside Tucson Business food and beverage columnist and president and CEO of the award-winning Russell Public Communications here in Tucson, is our host of Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. If you were ever thinking about a nice road trip over to Silver City, this is the weekend. This is the signature event going on, the Clay Festival. Everything to do with pottery right now in Silver City. Good time to get away over to a great part of the southwestern United States. Only a three-hour drive. Go to southwestnewmexico.org for all the information you need about a great place in the United States. Let's welcome now Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. A little bit hungry, a little bit thirsty, but otherwise just fine.
That's the way we watch you on Weekend Watch. We starve you for 24 hours before the WW so you can tell us about the HH, which is happy hour.
Indeed. You know, Bill, there's been a lot of talk in the news recently about the health benefits of the Mediterranean diet.
Oh, yeah.
My happy hour pick today is kind of an encouragement for those who want a healthy yet fully flavorful way to get their weekend started Mediterranean style. It's Pita Jungle, and their happy hour is anchored by 20 small plates and tapas, all for $5 or less.
Wow.
Like the authentic baba ganoush for only $1.50, garlic lemon chicken with pine nuts for only $2.50, or salmon sliders for only $4. Now, of course, major discounts apply on beers and wines and cocktails as well. Two locations convenient for everybody, Broadway near Craycroft and Oracle in Ina. Happy hour starts at 3 o'clock today at Pita Jungle.
You know, I was talking about Silver City. Why not stop on the way to Silver City at Apple Annie's?
Right on. And this weekend, perfect timing, kicks off a month-long celebration of sweet and juicy peaches at the 18th annual Peach Mania out in Wilcox at Apple Annie. Starting at 7:30 tomorrow morning, Bill, it's all-you-can-eat peaches and pancakes for breakfast, followed by wagon rides into the orchard where you can pick your own peaches, homemade peach pie, peach ice cream, apple-smoked burgers for lunch. Really a great family affair, Bill, with lots of fun for the kids and more peaches than you can imagine at Apple Annie's.
Any grand openings?
Well, fans of the downtown craft beer and wine bar, Tap and Bottle, have reason to rejoice this weekend as owners Rebecca and Scott Safford officially open their second location tomorrow on the northeast corner of Ina and Oracle. Great community gathering place for those with a passion for the craft. Lots of great brews on tap, premium wines by the glass and by the bottle, plus a full retail store for those who kind of want to grab and go. Plenty of fun on tap for the grand opening tomorrow. I'll be there looking for my fellow Buckmaster listeners. It's going to be a lot of fun.
What's in the column this week?
Well, you know, Bill, there's a fun, funky, and fascinating cut of chicken that's starting to appear on menus all over town. It's called airline chicken, but I assure you, it's not what you think. You can read all about this first-class poultry palooza in this week's edition of Inside Tucson.
Have a good one. Thank you, Matt Russell.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
Are there real dangers of a cyber attack? West Point Professor of Defense Robin Burke joins Charles Heller. Then at 11:30, get me Roger Stone, a half hour of Roger Stone himself, Liberty Watch, and America Armed and Free, right after Swap Shop, 10 a.m. Sunday on KVOI with Charles Heller. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for its content. Want to thank Christophon for his wonderful original music for our theme music for the Buckmaster Show, the fine young German composer. You can get a link to his work on my website, buckmastershow.com. Of course, I want to thank Rosemary Brandt. Rose has been with me since the beginning of our radio venture 6.5 years ago. Make sure all of our podcasts get up in such a timely manner. We've got pretty much every show we have done in 6.5 years archived at buckmastershow.com. I want to thank Tom Fairbanks, his smiley face and his very agile fingers keeping all of the equipment going in the right direction, engineering and producing the show. Ray Allen with me Monday through Thursday. And why don't I just say thanks to everybody here at KVOI. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great weekend.